Show for those of you who are tuning in again, welcome back. For those of you who are tuning in for the first time, welcome. And I hope you don't get offended by the lighter side of genocide. I mean, I just try to have a little bit of fun. I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, and occasionally people get offended. And it doesn't mean that I'm not sorry, though. I am. I'm real sorry when I offend people. I don't do it intentionally. I'm just telling the truth. And every time you tell the truth, you offend both sides of every argument, because both sides of every argument always happen to be wrong. God, it's so frustrating. But anyway, today we have something a little less frustrating. A fabulous lady named Siobhan Cyrese. Siobhan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Vinny. Thank you.
Could you tell us a little bit about who you are? I'll plug your website as well, because the show's kind of like a bathtub.
Okay.
Didn't work very well without plug.
Sure. Well, for starters, I go by Siobhan of the Cyrese family, for future reference. And my website is www.humanitytranscending.com. Those two words really describe me very well. Like you say, you try to have a healthy sense of humor regarding all this dire global situation we're going through. So I see it the same way. I think we need to view ourselves as transcending this madness and transcending this genocide that you're speaking of, and transcending all of this crazy negativity, transcending the fraud and the deception, and move beyond it and create the life that we want. So humanity transcending is a very real intention for me. I mean, you can read my book on my website. It's also available on Amazon in audio and in digital form. I have paperbacks that people contact me directly for. But I want people to read the information nonetheless. So if you can't afford it, you can read it for free. Because there are things that I believe people should know.
What made you believe that? I mean, what actually kind of woke you up, as it were, and made you start doing all this?
Good question. My first waking up began around the area of food. I began reading about food and how most of our food is genetically modified and ridden with toxic pesticides, antibiotics and hormones. And so that was when I first started looking into to these things. And I went ahead and I opened up an organic little food store with a friend of mine. And we did good for a couple of years. We ended up closing down. But that was the beginning of my waking up journey. When we closed down, it was a blessing in disguise, because I was like married to the business and I had no life. It was all about that. So during the downtime of us gearing up to close down, I started researching some other things, and I could not believe what I was finding. For instance, the monetary system, right? The global fractional reserve central banking system that we have. Total fraud. The money's nothing of substance. There is no lawful money. Here in America, the United States is a corporation operating in bankruptcy since 1933. So there's no real government. The Republic still exists, but the United States per se is nothing more, nothing less than a corporation for profit. And all the U.S. citizens are employees of that corporation. So I started finding out things like that. I started finding out about the various ways the so-called government here in what's truly America, but the United States government, you know, has been spraying on the citizens for decades. They've been experimenting on the citizens and soldiers for decades, running programs like MKUltra, the CIA's secret mind control program. Most of the world knows about 9/11 and what a fraud that was and what an inside job that was. So, you know, once I took the red pill and dove into the rabbit hole, I didn't stop. And so I continue to find out more and more things like you do. And, you know, a lot of the things you talk about, one really just needs to look into the facts and the evidence. And we all kind of come to a similar conclusion.
That's true. And when facts and evidence reach similar conclusions, you kind of think to yourself, ah, that's better. Because you know that you're suddenly not the crazy person, because you're like, hey, I've got facts on my side. Isn't that somewhat fabulous?
That, very fabulous. And that's pretty much how I approached my book. I just filled it with facts that people can research and check into themselves. Because I'm really not interested in taking, in convincing people per se. I just want to present the facts to them. And that's enough in and of itself. All they need to do is look at them. Well, they don't have to, but if they decide to look at the facts, the truth is self-evident. The truth reveals itself.
Facts are rarely enough, though, haven't you found?
Absolutely. I don't have, there's no arguing, there's no debating, you know, the facts are the facts. And some people don't even want to go near the facts. And I get it, because it's a whole world view change. It can literally shake you to the core, you know. Learning these things have been quite a journey. When I first started finding out about the monetary system and the Agenda 21 and global government and the FEMA camps and all this stuff. You know, I think I was like in a slight depression for like 2 weeks. I was like, I don't even know if I want to be here. Not like I was going to kill myself, but I really was contemplating, if it gets to that point, I'm out. I don't want to be here anyway. Nobody's hauling me off anywhere to any FEMA camp. You can take me out at the door. I'm not going. So this was my attitude, still my attitude. So that's why, you know, at this point, I do educate, I do give presentations, but it's, and I'm also a spiritual life coach, and I have training in spiritual arts and energy work. So I look to balance both. You know, it's important to know this information, but it's also important how we process the information and how we process our emotions that come up around it, because it's really heavy stuff and very shocking to the system.
Do you think that people need to actually continue to be part of the system, like keep a foot in both worlds, like know about the corruption of the system, but still live quite happily within it?
Well, that's a good question. I feel yes. I feel our attitude is very important, because I've done a lot of research into quantum physics. I've looked at a lot of the Heart Math Institute's research. And then, of course, I read what the ancients and our ancestors have to tell us. And they're all telling us the same thing, which our modern science is confirming. And that is that our thoughts, our emotions, our words, all of that is programming the quantum field. So each and every one of us has a very big part in how life plays out. Now, things take time to manifest, right, on this plane, so maybe we can't always see it directly, which is the foundation of everything. We have a huge role in how this is going to turn out. So I think it's very important to keep our spirits up, and sometimes they're not going to be, and that's okay. It's a, you know, wave, it'll pass. But on the whole, I think it's very important to keep our thoughts healthy and keep them in the direction of what it is we want. Because, like I said, energetically, at the quantum level, it is making a huge impact. So we have one foot in the world as it is, and one foot in the world that we want to create. And just like the metaphor of the caterpillar turning into a butterfly, you know, the old cells and the new cells coexist. They coexist for a while. And then the caterpillar turns into a butterfly. But there's that period of coexistence, and I feel that's what we're going through right now. We're coexisting with the elite and the tyrants and the banking families and the Illuminati, for back, you know, lack of a better word. We're coexisting with them, but the game is up. Many of us know the lies, and we know about the deception, and we know we've been being not even treated as. We know they've deemed us slaves. And so people like myself, like you, we're not taking it anymore, mentally, emotionally, and now many of us are taking action physically to not uphold this corruption anymore. So yeah, we got, you know, one leg in, leg in this world, leg in that world, but we got to coexist like that for a little while.
Yeah, yeah, it's a transitional period, right? You don't jump from one cliff to the other. It's almost like there's an earthquake that split the land in two. And on the one hand, there's your old life. There's the I love watching television, and I love going out to bars and reaching for the lasers and what have you. And then on the other side of the ravine, as it were, there's truth, there's self-sufficiency, there's responsibility, there's sound money, there's adopting yourself into the legal fiction paradigm with your birth certificate and so on and so forth. You know, the idealized, we're no longer a victim of scumbaggery mankind. So the real question is, how exactly do you make that transition? And I'm wondering just how much of a role a single individual truly has in this. And I'm starting to think that it's actually quite a massive role that individual people are starting to take up and expose the New World Order system and the legal fiction and all of that kind of stuff. I just wonder, and I hope that they're still keeping their feet on the ground, as it were. Ironically enough, I keeping your feet on the ground in the New World Order paradigm sense of the word, you know, still watching Family Guy and having a few laughs every now and again, going out, having Tex-Mex with your mates on Sundays, yeah, you know, that kind of stuff. There's nothing wrong with it. Nothing wrong with it whatsoever. Not Entertain yourself. Have fun with your friends. That's the thing that you can do to best defeat the New World Order, because it keeps you happy. And if you're happy, you're a hell of a lot less afraid, and if you're a hell of a lot less afraid, you can think way better. And I don't want you to think.
No, that's absolutely true. The more healthy our spirits are, the clearer in mind we are. Fear, I mean, talk about fear. It's something that, since I began finding out about these things, have been working through and like purging in a way. And now I'm playing a bigger game of up to. In my own life, I have opted out of U.S. citizenship and am a private, living, sentient woman on the land. And that's how I'm living my life. And you've recently been dealing with a court situation for traffic violations against the legal fiction, and took that as an opportunity to declare who I am. And so I've done that, and I've been thrown in jail twice. And the second time in jail was basically a last-ditch effort, because this particular court's time was running out with regards to my affidavit of fact and truth, and they haven't rebutted it. They had 10 days to rebut it. I'm going to be an honorable woman and extend them an extra 3 days to rebut it, but the thing is, they can't, because they're de facto courts. They're operating under color of authority, color of law. Judges here in America are supposed to have a delegation of authority order from the Congress to uphold constitutional laws, and they also took an oath. All public officials take an oath here to uphold the Constitution. And all of them, right, they all took that oath under perjury, and every single one of them are perjurizing themselves because they're not upholding constitutional laws. They're upholding commercial laws, maritime admiralty jurisdiction. So they're all guilty of lying and perjurizing themselves. And so in my affidavit, one of the things I asked for was the judge's delegation of authority order. And if he doesn't provide it, judge is in agreement that he has no authority. And lo and behold, they didn't rebut not one point out of the 16 on my affidavit, because they can't. So talk about fear, you know, dealing with the jails, dealing with the brutality and the verbal abuse and the psychological abuse in those places, and then having to stand up for myself in a courtroom that is full-blown martial law courtroom, as they all are nowadays. So I've really been purging some fear big time lately, but that's the game. You know, the further we go into this, then this particular route's not for everybody, but nonetheless, everybody's dealing with a certain amount of fear, knowing that global government is so in place already, knowing their plans for the population, you know, this basically eliminating a huge portion of the population. Then you have Codex Alimentarius, which wants to make it, minerals and vitamins toxic and having to be regulated. So looking at the world situation, a lot of fear can come. And that is totally normal. It is so normal. And I think it's not to be suppressed. I think it's okay to talk about it and vent it out and purge it out. Because if we hold on to it, you don't have a clear mind, like you said before. You know, our minds are not clear to make the decisions we need to be making. If we're in fear, we're not healthy. Even physically, you feel it in the body. It feels paralyzing. So I really encourage people to just purge it. Tell somebody. If you don't have anybody, email me. Email me, and we'll talk about it. But you need to get through the fear. It needs to be released and moved through, because if it doesn't, it will paralyze us. And then we really have no effect over anything. So,
yeah. I mean, there's two ways of going about things. Number one is gung-ho, I'm going to do it, and I'm just going to do it, and I'm just going to do it, and I'm just going to do it. I don't care what anybody else says. I'm going to do it. This is my mission. And, you know, there's the one way of doing it, and usually it's the most effective. The second type is I don't know what I'm doing, so I'm going to go and ask people who do, and then I'm going to learn a little bit off them, and then I'm going to go do it. Okay, there's two approaches, both of which you wind up learning something and accomplishing something. So it's a brilliant move. The difficulty is, of course, some people do not take those two courses of action. In fact, instead of taking action at all, they wind up sitting back and keeping on absorbing information. Okay, and I've got nothing against people informing themselves, unless you inform yourself more than you actually act on that information. If you don't act on the information, what good is it being informed? You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, encouraging you to take action and whatnot. Siobhan of the family, Soresi, is my guest, and we'll be right back after the break. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide, the fastest 2 hours in talk radio, and various other things as well, like the sexiest 2 hours in talk radio. My very special guest is Siobhan of the family, Soresi. And in fact, I was talking with a couple of... Damn it! I can't call them free men. I don't know what it is. I'm talking with commonly known as Dom and Clint Richardson and my mate down here in New Zealand, Andrew Hendry and Peter Valentine. They're all kind of they don't call themselves free men, but it's the same free men esque tight thing. And the definitions that come out, you know, it's God, sometimes really annoying. I mean, whatever you call yourself, legal fiction campaigner, lawful right asserter, judicially recognized scumbaggery prosecutor, I don't care. You're all in the same flotilla.
Okay. Well, I guess probably the reason that once one takes this particular path, you begin to be very careful with the words that you use, because the words that we use unknowingly can place us into another jurisdiction. They can, again, like a word like driver, for instance. You know, most people, just driving the car, driver. And most people don't realize that that is legalese. That particular term, if you look in a law dictionary, it's somebody who's hired to drive. It's a driver for hire. So it all has to do with commerce. So if you say you're a driver, then you're saying you agree to the laws of commerce. Now, in America, we have a common law right to travel. So I have a right to control my car and travel in it. Now, I know that sounds silly, like why be so picky with words, but it really matters in this particular realm. So free men, you know, there's attachments to that too, what we're finding. So basically, that's why I keep it pretty simple. I just call myself a private living woman because that differentiates me from the public legal fiction, which has no life, just exists on paper. Private living woman versus public legal fiction. Two entirely different worlds, two entirely different galaxies. So that's why people are a little careful with their words when they say take this path. So I know they're driving you a little nuts.
It's not so much that's something that I comprehend, understand, it's just like I'm wondering why it even needs to be tried to clarify with me, because you know the people I'm talking to know me and know that I know the difference.
Right. Well, you know, it's just kind of
a catch-all term. You know, it's a free man movement, and they're like, oh, I don't want to be part of the free man movement. It's stupid. Really, are you talking about legal fiction? Yep. That's what the free man movement does, you know.
Yeah, definitely. They're probably, you know, just, again, it's you learn to talk a whole new way. You really do. So they're probably, you know, just going through the motions of their own understanding and their own processing of it all. But yeah, I mean, technically, you know, free men, free woman, that's what we're up to. That's what I'm up to. That's what other people are up to. And you're talking now, you know, you said before, realizing the impact of our individual consciousness regarding this whole thing. That's really, that route is entirely personal and individual. You know, it's not for everybody, but I am glad to see that it's worldwide. There's free men movements all over the world. You know, sovereign, free man, free woman, creditor, they all mean the same thing. They all mean that, you know, you are the authority of your life. You do not give permission for people to have authority over you. You basically just agree to the most basic laws that keep a civilization civilized, like we don't kill each other. We don't steal from each other. We don't breach the peace and create chaos for another and harass another. Very, very basic principles, the natural law. So that's what we or myself or, you know, other free men or women per se, that's what we agree to. That's easy. That's honorable. Everything else is fictitious. Everything else is commercial law. And it's fine if you know how to play the game, but, you know, I'm learning to play the game, like you say, one foot in one world, one foot in the other. You can't really be a legal fiction. You can't be a legal fiction and a private free woman or free man at the same time. You're always a private man or private woman, living woman. But the legal fiction is there to do commerce with. That's its only function. That's how the government can do business with a living man or woman, is through the legal fiction. But the problem is that the living man or woman unknowingly assumes liability and obligations as the legal fiction when they are not the legal fiction. And so because there's no lawful money of exchange, any debts, charges attached to the legal fiction can be discharged dollar for dollar because there's no lawful money. You can't pay anything. It's called HJR 192. When the country went bankrupt, because apparently what I'm learning is they always have to give remedy. When the country went bankrupt and they began pledging the citizens as collateral to float loans, the remedy, because there's no lawful money, nothing can be paid, is that all debts can be discharged dollar for dollar. So there's people who are doing this. If you look at the creditors and commerce guys, Gordon Hall, all these guys talk, Winston Shrout, these guys talk about that and sovereignty, and but they don't even have to use those words because they are it, right? When I first wanted to learn about this path, I was like, how do I become a sovereign? How do I become a sovereign? And the truth is, we're already sovereign. We're born free. We're born on the land, free men, free women already. Through the birth certificate, we're signed over into slavery. Unknowingly, right? Parents knowing, if parents knew this, they probably wouldn't be doing it. But any time a parent, usually the mother is listed as an informant on the birth certificate, once they apply and sign that birth certificate, they have just signed their child into slavery. The state now has title to the body of that child. That's why child protection services can come in and yank kids out of your home, because you gave them permission to do that. So, and there is no obligation to register your children. They will make you believe you must, but this is part of the waking up, right? Just like we're asking questions about everything else now, and for a long time already, folks have been asking questions about that, and that too has turned out to be nothing more than a fraud. So, you know, that's one piece of it. But I think the Free Men movement, no matter how corny some may think it sounds, is very, very important. It's an important movement for the planet because it's really about liberating ourselves from our voluntary slavery.
Well, absolutely. Not being a volunteer slave is a good move.
Yeah, I'll say.
Yeah, yeah. And folks, you can call in. The number is 218-339-8525. Sorry, I should have given the number out earlier. But we have a caller on the line now. Area code 503. What's your first name and state you're calling from?
Oregon in the USA.
Oregon. And what's your first name there, man?
I'm Larry Engel. I write blogs on somebody's famous webpage.
Larry! What's up, man?
Hi, Vinny. Hi, Vinny.
What can we do for you today, man?
Well, I just wanted to call in to tell you that I've read this lady's book.
Oh, yeah?
It's fabulous. Mm-hmm. She writes very clearly. It's easy to understand. But the most important thing is that you cannot argue against her because everything is very, very highly documented. So if you disagree with something he says, you can't do it because she's got the documents right there to prove it.
Well, thank you.
That right there?
Yeah, I would say he's pretty right on. And I did, and that was deliberate and on purpose that I followed up many of my paragraphs in the book with, you know, in parentheses, a couple of sources to go check it out. I didn't even waste my time with a bibliography. What I'm saying right now, boom, here it is in parentheses where you can go look it up. So yeah, everything's very well sourced in that book.
I have a question for her. Do you feel that the listeners, the people around the world, America and New Zealand, Australia, places like that, are in danger from the New World Order? Do you feel that there's a real danger, a life and death danger? And I'll hang up and listen off the air.
Okay. I do. And that's why I read the book, and that's why I'm choosing to live my life the way I am. The danger is already here. Right, I mean, our food supply is grossly tainted with genetically modified organisms and all sorts of bacteria and toxic pesticides that cause cancer. The geoengineering, I'm part of Long Island Skywatch here, and we've been raising awareness about, you know, what people call chemtrails, geoengineering, for a while now. We see it all the time. Today, they covered the sky. We watched them streak up the sky, and now it's just a milky white sky, and I see this all the time. The legal fiction, that's been in place for hundreds of years, if not thousands. You know, the Vatican has a lot to do with that. Again, because when we're born, what I've been learning is that through the birth certificate, an estate is also created, what's called the Setike V Trust. An estate is created. The creator of the estate is the state. And all of the assets, anything like that attached to the legal fiction is held in trust. And we are the beneficiary of that trust. So we don't own anything. We think we own stuff. We think we own our home. We own this. We don't own anything. It's already been claimed by the New World Order a long time ago. So do I think there's an imminent danger? Yeah, definitely, which is why I do what I do, which is why I give you kudos, Larry, which is why you do what you do, because you have concern and it's very real. And it's been here. It's just I feel like there's more things in the pipeline that are way more extreme. So, I do believe there's a danger. I believe that that's why we were talking about the fear before. It's important to move through the fear, discuss the fear so that we can get it the heck out of our way so that we can make clear decisions in the face of this danger. At the same time, I do see a mass global awakening, and it seems to me to be expanding on a regular basis. Even in my own personal life, my sphere has been expanding, and I know almost everybody I deal with is awake to some level, to some degree. So I see two things happening simultaneously. I see the old world order is being exposed for what it is, and I see a new way of living and a new life emerging for the planet, largely, I don't want to say thanks, but largely due to the work that people like you and myself do, right? And the predecessors, the people who have paved the road for us to just come in and say, hey, yeah, this is going on, this is going on. I mean, there were people talking about this decades and decades ago. There have been politicians and Congress people, men and women, who have talked about the fraud of the Federal Reserve, you know, back in the 30s, 40s. You know, it's all on the record. So people have been talking about this stuff for a long time.
Yeah, since the days of Andrew Jackson.
Right. The central banks have been trying to get their paws on this country for centuries. And once they did, well, it was a complete downward spiral from there.
Yeah, that's true. We'll be coming up to a break in a minute. We've got Sid in Kentucky on the line. Welcome to the program, mate. If you want to pass a question and then hold on over the break to talk a little more, you can, mate. But what's up?
Hey, Vinny, another great guest, man. And like your last caller, I, too, am familiar with her. Love her work. She's so thoughtful, and he was right. She explains things much better than free men and free women trying to explain such a difficult subject. So let me hold, and I don't have a question yet. I do, but it's
formulating.
It'll take too long to answer. We only have 20 seconds. All right, Sid. Well, what you should probably do then is hang up and just quickly ring back and hold on over the break. That should
be good.
All right, thanks, Sid. Okay, Siobhan Sorese. Siobhan of the family.
Siobhan of the Cerisi family. That's okay.
Of the Cerisi family.
You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show. You can join us in the chat room at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. And if you'd like to call in as well, this is your last chance to have a convo with Siobhan. And then we're going to have Catherine Smith from the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine giving us a dummy's guide to vaccinating your kids. Be right back.
To be alive and on top, my reach is global, my tower secure, my cause is noble, my power is pure. I can hand out a million vaccinations, I'll let them all die in exasperation, have them
Welcome
all healed from lacerations, have them all killed by assassination. I can make
Welcome
it nobody
back
go
to the
prison.
Show that's all about vaccinations, laceration, scumbaggery, and various other eclectic, interesting things. It's the lighter side of genocide, the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. The only Kiwi talk show that goes out on American airwaves
is the Vinny Eastwood Show.
And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, check out the archives, man. If you think Siobhan's good, she is. there's a hell of a lot of other people that we have on all the time. To tell you the truth, a good, I don't know, maybe 9 out of 10 of the guests that we have on the show, I've not even heard of before I start interviewing them. I haven't even, in most of the cases, I haven't even so much as looked at their website. That's why I start every show with, tell us who you are and what you do. Because I don't know! I don't have the time to find out rather than interviewing people. So if you want me to interview somebody, it doesn't matter who it is. Trust me, I get along with everybody. Send me an email. Okay, go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, click on the contact page, send us an email. Because you, the listeners, are the reason why we get so many interesting, diverse guests. Because you, the listeners, are the ones who are also diverse and fabulous. Okay? Love you very much, because I couldn't do the show without you, quite literally. Now, I had a few jokes before we go to Sid in Kentucky. Larry, you asked, are we under in threat? You know, are we under threat? You know, is the New World Order planning to exterminate us? And then the answer to this is always the same every single time. In progress! Every single minute of every single day, you're being killed in some little evil scumbaggery way. Okay, that's the conclusion that I've come to. And the reason why I do this show, the lighter side of genocide, is because despite the fact that I know that I'm about to be exterminated by ruthless criminal bangster scum, I can still have a lot of fun. And it takes away the stress of the situation of knowing that there's some ruthless criminal elite that don't care about my life and actually, for all intents and purposes, wish that I was dead and buried along with 90% of the rest of the population. Now, we were talking about de facto courts earlier, Siobhan, and the reason why they're de facto courts is they don't care about defects. It's pretty straightforward.
I'm going to use that. I love it.
And we're also talking about creditors. Now, have you ever seen the movie Alien versus Creditor? It's quite a scary one. And there was Creditor and Creditor 2, I think, before that. You know, because that's actually interestingly what it is. Creditor interchangeable with predator, except they won't rip your spine out. So anyway, we're gonna go to Sid in Kentucky. Welcome to the program, mate. Have you formulated a question?
Oh yeah. Actually, the reason I couldn't ask a question, Vinny, is that if I had my choice, I would talk to her for about an hour. But I do have some questions, and here's the question that I would ask her immediately. Why haven't you spoken about the natural right that we all have to informed consent in all the contracts, the driver's license, the birth certificate, none of us are being informed of what we're consenting to. So that makes the contract invalid, but you know that, of course.
Correct, right. Yes, that's true. there are several things that need to be in place for a contract to be lawful and valid. One of them is mutual consent. One of them is full disclosure.
Yeah.
One of them is equal consideration. And there's none. And I think I'm missing a fourth one. There's another for the fourth one, but I think I'm missing.
No. The three.
The three. Okay. So those three things need to be in place for a contract to be valid and lawful. And of course, none of them really are. When you apply for the license, where's the equal consideration? You're basically saying you're the surety. You're taking on obligation, where is the consideration on the other, you know, from the other party, the state? There is none. and of course, there's no full disclosure. We're not told that we're a slave if we contract under that name. They don't tell us that. So any contract entered into...
It would be classic if they did, you know, if like you go in, you get your birth certificate stamped by a notary, and like, boom, now you're a slave. Welcome to the New World Order.
Yeah, well, that would be the right thing to do.
Let me tell you, if I may, I carry around a UCC stamp everywhere I go, and if they make me sign my name, I pull out my stamp, and you should see the looks on their faces. I don't even try to hide it. I don't try to hide it from them. They know, or they've been told what to do. I don't really care. If they want my signature, this is how they'll get it.
Right.
And I don't even want to do it then. I don't want to give my signature to anything. You know, because of the lies and the cheats and the steals and the, you know, and the more lies. And, you know, my God, you know, I want out. But don't we all?
I take legal problems as the same as, as a customer in drug dealing, essentially. This is something my brother told me. He said, if you're ever going to buy drugs, don't buy it off somebody you don't know. And I think the legal fiction actually stands true as well. When you're entering into contracts with people, when you're putting your signature on, if you don't know that person, they could be selling you a lemon.
That's a fact.
Sure. Sure. Well,
they could be, even if they know you now, Vinny. You know, it's the craziness has come out big time. Even in people that you knew, that you thought you knew, you know? I wish I hadn't said that.
Oh, no, it's very true, and I think it's actually quite a valid point, because sometimes it's the people that you know that will be your biggest enemies and that kind of thing. And it comes down to, I think, you know how brothers and sisters, they seem absolutely adept at getting it under one another's skin at some point, that sort of deal? Well, once you start to break away from the crowd and what have you, as David Icke says, they've turned everybody into the enforcers. And because the enforcers are very, very close to you and they know a heck of a lot about you and also know how to get under your skin, it makes it that much more hard to basically just tolerate it, to just deal with it. And I'm not sure how.
All my family are judges and lawyers, dude.
Oh my
so,
God!
Yeah. I mean, I'm in madness all my life. You know, in my starting my seventh decade of total madness. You know, where up is down, always has been. You have to figure up and down yourself, man. You know, and then you got to stick true to it. And once you do that, man, you unleash potential inside yourself that you don't even realize you have. And then if you start to really celebrate that, guess what? You unleash more. And then you start to understand that we really are in an illusion. It's all an illusion. The whole money system, the contracting, the slavery is an illusion. See, and that's what they're scared about. They're losing their illusion. That's what they're really scared about. We're waking up, and they're losing their illusion. Because if we wake up, their illusion dies. The last one that wakes up kills the illusion. Matter of fact, that should be the name of a song or something. But, you know, it had to be punk rock so that they wouldn't listen to it, you know.
Yeah.
Or maybe they would, whoever they are, wherever they live, you know, whatever their number is.
I don't want nuclear, I want cold fusion. The last one to wake up will break the illusion.
Well, here, hey, Vinny, look, not to be off topic, and I apologize, but These boogers have been traveling the stars for better part of 70 years, thanks to the Germans. But you know what? If you're not going to read and study, then you're not going to know. So they get to do light travel for a generation while we pay for electric lights on copper wires. Our internet is on copper wires still. So,
and I love the background on that. Guess who had a copper wire monopoly back in the day? J.P.
Indeed.
Morgan.
Yeah, indeed. No, indeed.
Surprise.
Yeah. So this thing is, you know, look, we got to get on our own and just put these boogers in their place at every opportunity. Quietly, calmly. But don't let them get away with anything anymore. Call them out. Call them out.
With boogers. You pick them out, and then you give them the flick. And that's precisely what we need to do.
Well, I started it, so yeah, I guess so, Vinny.
And depending on your disposition, you might eat them too, I suppose. But
oh, dude, that's just wrong.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not sure if I want some like Barack Obama spare ribs with barbecue sauce or anything like that. I mean, cannibalism is frowned on in some cultures.
It's practiced among the high and mighty, man.
Yeah. Although, we do have a rather corpulent politician in New Zealand called Jerry Brownlee, and I'm sure We could feed quite a number of poor New Zealand families on that guy. And there's also another lady, Paula Bennett, who's like the social development minister. You know, she's supposed to be helping the kids or anything. The only way she can help the kids is if we harpoon the bitch and feed her to them. It's unbelievable, these people. But anyway.
Hey, I want you to get back to your guest, Vinny, at peace. You guys rocking, man, and I'm enjoying your archives, so thank you.
All right, thank you very much for your call, Sid, man. It's been awesome. And Siobhan, unfortunately, we've come to kind of the end of the show here now. So humanitytranscending.com is Siobhan's little website there. Thank you very much for coming on.
You're welcome. I wanted to also let people know they can find a few videos that I've made on YouTube. My channel on YouTube is Humanity Transcending, and I'm going to be making a lot more, documenting my whole experience here of unplugging myself from the Matrix and morphing from slave to, you know, free woman, child of the universe, again, like I was intended to be when I arrived on the planet. So I'll be documenting that whole experience, so you can watch my videos there, check me out on the website, and thanks, you know, I just want to say thanks to Sid for all the wonderful things he said and all the important things.
All right, here we go. I'm sorry. Thank you, Siobhan, and we'll see you again sometime. Listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the Vinny Eastwood Show.com. Now, hopefully, joining us now is my second hour guest, Catherine Smith from New Zealand, the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine editor. Catherine, are you there?
Yes, I am, Vinny. How are you?
I'm fabulous now that you're here.
Oh, that's good. Wonderful.
Yep. Well, okay. Could you just tell people a little bit about yourself, just kind of preface yourself? Because we're going to be talking about vaccines today. And when you talk anything medical, ultimately the best thing to do, I think, is to preface the conversation by saying, I have credibility because of such and such and such.
Okay. Well, where do I start? I'm a trained herbalist, although I'm not now in practice. I've been the editor of the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine for a year. In terms of my background on vaccination, I've had a sort of personal and professional interest in it for over 20 years. I've got a daughter of 20 years, and my interest in vaccination started when I was pregnant and read a very interesting article in the copy of Nexus magazine. The article was written by Vera Scheidner and was relating stress from vaccination to disruptions in infant breathing patterns and increased risk of sudden infant death. So that was sort of my introduction to the fact that vaccinations are not, quote-unquote, safe and effective as they're usually promoted. And from then, I researched the topic further and we made a decision, my husband and I, not to vaccinate our daughter, against a lot of pressure, I might add, because my husband's father was a doctor and was very keen on vaccination. And further to that, when our daughter was three, I began to train as a herbalist. And I was in practice for 10 years part-time. I sort of fitted it in around other work, various activism, homeschooling, writing books. I wrote a book on cancer prevention, and that looks... for example, at the contribution, or at least some of the contribution of vaccines as the cause of cancer. And I also treated vaccine-injured children, and once you've treated vaccine-injured children, it's very hard to feel sanguine about, the safety or even efficacy of vaccines. So, yes, personal and professional interest in this subject for over 20 years. Most recently, I've started an organisation in New Zealand called No Forced Vaccines. I started that towards the beginning of 2011.
That's noforcevaccines.org, the website, isn't it?
That's right. And the purpose of that is to resist current moves within some members of the government to change from a vaccination policy which respects individual rights to choose whether or not they want to be vaccinated to one that seeks to coerce parents to vaccinate their children.
There's two things. The two things that gave me the impetus to bring you on today, Kath, is some two recent news items. Number one was a news item by John Campbell. Campbell Live. He's like the what would you say? Sort of like a wussier, more gay Walter Cronkite, and of New Zealand. And they had this these two people debating. Okay, basically, it was two people in the office. One was adamantly for vaccination. One was adamantly against it. And of course, the only professional that they had commenting was very, very pro-vaccine. When the anti-vaccine lady asked him, "Are there any side effects of any kind?" And with a big smile, and I'm a salesman, so I recognize this smile. It's not a real one. He says, no, there's absolutely no problem. It's all fine. There's been wonderful trials, and it's so proven, and it's efficacious. And it's almost like the man was about to, I don't know, like spit in his own face with his own tongue or something. It was unbelievable. It was scary. Like there was some kind of vaccinated demonic possession going on here. There was that propaganda piece by the mainstream media. And secondly, which is what happened last night, which is what I called you instantly while the story was even running. I didn't even wait for it to finish. I was like, get Kath on the line. Was that they are now going to allow children to be in charge of whether or not they get vaccinated against, even if it's against, their parents' will. And they can even do it without even informing their parents. So this was the most horrifying, scariest thing that I saw on television last night. It was oh my god. What are the ramifications of all of this, Kath? Kath, are you there? We seem to be having a problem with the phone line. So, Kath, if you would just want to hang up and call back in, just the same number again, we'll bring you up there because we just have a little bit of a problem with the phones at present. So just hang up and ring on back. Because I wanted to talk a little bit about this sort of thing because I know a lot of people who don't really know that much about vaccines, but they're concerned and they want to know. It's just the fact that they don't know about it as yet. And in my opinion, when you start to inform people about these things, it's quite shocking for them, particularly because you're essentially going toe-to-toe with medical establishment propaganda that's been supplanted in their minds for quite a few years. If they've had it repeated over and over and again, vaccines are safe, vaccines are effective, get your jab, they're free, this, that, and the other. It's like they're trying against so much reality. Like literally, vaccine pushes are against the interpretation of reality. That's my ultimate conclusion. But I don't care about reality. Now, secondly, not only do they not care about reality, but they don't care about the damage that their drugs and vaccines and what have you actually do. They don't care. They want you dead. Quite literally. And they've admitted it. And they do things deliberately to make sure that the vaccines hurt and kill you. And I'm not joking. If anybody is a medical doctor or a nurse or a frontline staff member or something, this affects you too. Okay? You go on YouTube and you search for cancer viruses in the vaccines, and you will most likely come up with a BBC video. That's the British Broadcasting Corporation, if the credibility isn't enough for you, saying that, yes, we put cancer viruses in the vaccine, and laughing about it. Okay? That's what we really have to comprehend when we talk about this. Is that they not only deliberately put cancer-causing viruses in the vaccines, but they think it's funny. Kath is back. Kath, are you there?
Yes, I'm there. Okay. You all right? Can you hear me?
Yep.
Good. Okay, I can hear you fine.
All right. Where did we leave off with you coming off there? Because I was just talking about how the vaccine industry deliberately add things in to, you know, take on you. But I wanted to get into the children being able to consent themselves to taking the vaccines in New Zealand.
Well, that's right. You were discussing an item you saw on the TV3 news network last night. And I didn't actually see it myself because our television's broken and we're not planning to replace it. But I did look on the TV3 website and I read the story associated with the broadcast. And we're not actually talking about something that's happening or could happen in the future in New Zealand. We're talking about something that's actually happening now. In New Zealand, we have a public health system which has set targets for vaccination. For the 0 to 2 year age group, for example, they have set a target for 95% of children to be fully vaccinated. And they've talked about setting a target for older children. Whether or not that has actually been set, I don't know yet.
It's very scary the language they use. They're targeting children for vaccination.
Yes. Well, it is a bit like that. I mean, there's a very good book on vaccination, which is another one of my sort of early influences in terms of credible evidence that shows that vaccination can cause harm, and it's called A Shot in the Dark. And it's written by Harris Coulter, who's a medical historian, and a woman whose name escapes me just right now, which is unfortunate, but... She started a very good organisation which probably all your US listeners will probably already be familiar with, which is the National Vaccine Information Centre. And she started it together with other parents whose children had had adverse reactions to the old DTT or diphtheria pertussis, which is whooping cough and the tetanus shot. Her son had an adverse reaction and ended up... somewhat disabled from it. And so that was the sort of impetus for starting this organisation, and it provides a very good service from its website. I think it's nvic.org in terms of giving parents information so that they can make a more informed choice about vaccination. And it also provides a sort of advocacy role to allow parents to continue to be able to make an informed choice about vaccination, because everybody in the US knows that you can't get your children into school in the US, if you want them to go to school, that is, or you need them to go to school because you need the childcare, unless they are either vaccinated or you've got an exemption from them being vaccinated. And what is happening in the US, probably not news to people in the US, is that... there have been a number of initiatives designed to sort of roll back the exemptions, if you like. They're first of all targeting philosophical exemptions for vaccination. Parents in Vermont at the moment are fighting very hard to retain their right to decide that they don't want to have their child vaccinated, not to have to justify it because of family medical or history or anything, simply to say, no, he or she is my child and I don't want to have him or her being exposed to the risk of any vaccine.
Well, that's the interesting thing, Kath. Because you're talking about the risks associated with vaccines, and yet on Campbell Live, which goes out to, you know, it's a huge fracking news program, which everybody trusts and whatever, and the guy says there's absolutely no chance of any bad reaction whatsoever. Well, he obviously didn't read out the vaccination sheet from Blimmin' MedSafe, which says that there's certain amounts of reactions and what have.
That's right. I mean, you know, he's either delusional or, you know, he's telling porkies on purpose. And I didn't see it, so I've got no way of judging, you know, whether or not he's being intentionally dishonest or whether he's just completely ignorant, has never bothered to read a manufacturer's data sheet for a vaccine in his life. Has anybody
Trust me, Kath. I was just going to say, trust me, I'm a former salesman, and I can see my own ilk. That guy was selling something. And you know when people are telling you that something's completely safe and they say that there's no risk of any kind? I've said that to people many times as well, and it's not necessarily been the case.
Right.
And I did it with a big smile on my face and a very happy tone in my voice, just like that guy did too. So I would venture a wild jab in the dark, so to speak, that this guy is not only on the take, but he loves it.
Right. Well, I mean,
but
you know,
anyway,
it's sad,
my assumption.
You know, it's sad that there is not enough knowledge about vaccination in the community of journalists in general. Otherwise, people like him would not be able to get away with making, frankly, erroneous statements like that. You know, if Campbell, the host of the show, had been properly prepared and wanted to, you know, have a sort of show that gave people enough information to make an informed choice, he would have read the manufacturer's data sheet on the MedSafe website for some flu vaccines, and then he would have pulled the guy up at that point and said, but, you know, hang on, the manufacturer of this brand of vaccine says, well, it can cause X, Y, and Z side effects. What are you talking about? Don't you think that it's deceptive to say to the public that there are no risks from being vaccinated when the manufacturers of the vaccines admit that, you know, there's the risks of you know, certain conditions occurring after vaccination? But, you know, as I said, that hasn't happened. And I've got to say that is actually, unfortunately, typical of that particular host. He had a woman called Dr. Nikki Turner. She is a medical doctor in New Zealand, and she is the spokesperson for an organisation called the Immunisation Advisory Centre, or IMAC for short, which purports to be a source of independent information about vaccines, but has in the past acknowledged vaccine companies as sponsors on its website. It took them down, actually, after my husband and I went on National Māori Radio here in New Zealand and pointed out that, you know, this organisation that's purporting to provide independent, quote-unquote, information about the risks and benefits of vaccines has, you know, acknowledged vaccine companies as sponsors. It doesn't look too good, really, does it? So they took that down, but, you know, the point is, notwithstanding that, when Dr. Nikki Turner appeared on the Campbell Show probably around about a year ago speaking about measles, she made a number of points which would easily be demonstrably false, and he should have been pulled up on by the host of the show if he had, you know, read the data sheet for the vaccine or sort of done any sort of background reading on either sort of measles, the disease, or
journalism's dead. Kath, it really is. I'm not going to be able to unmute you, so you're going to have to hang up and ring back again, Kath, and we'll come back from break in about 4 minutes. Back in a minute, ladies and gentlemen.
I take my anger to a place that ain't gonna get up in your face. The facts we okay, but the system fails. We got to change the way we see the problem if we're gonna fix this place. My living soul don't care about the color of your face.
face. Unite and roll, respect our right to live here on the land. It's Tino Ranga, Tina Tonga, we don't own the banks. The parliament does so, so where do you ever stand? They paying their bills off your back with hefty tax demands. Misleading our youth with alcohol, TV contrabands. So kids act up and disturb our community. Uninformed public then consents to our planned absurdity. What? Replace our human rights with commercial slavery. They print a hundred bucket.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, alone, but don't put the to the show that's all about commercial slavery. What do you get? The Vinny Eastwood Show. On AmericanFreedomRadio.com, and incidentally, the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. You can join us in the chat room there if you go there. Hopefully, I'm not 100% sure how other people's computers see the websites that I've made. I mean, because I can only see them how my computer does. But anyway, top right-hand corner on my computer screen anyway is the chat room button at the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. So please come in and join the other people in there if you have some questions about vaccines today or something of that nature. Please come on in. And also, if you would like to ring in, we have the capacity to take your calls with Kath as well in case you have any inquiries in that regard. The number is 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. And if you are calling from New Zealand or overseas, the international calling number is 001. So that would be 001. 218-339-8525 for the international callers. Kath, welcome back.
Thank you, Vinny.
Right. Now, where were we? We were talking about, I think something needs to be said about the paid misinformation of the pharmaceutical industries to push vaccines onto people. Would you be able to inform people a little bit about that?
Well, in New Zealand, it's quite interesting. As we were discussing, we have pharmaceutical companies providing sponsorship money to organisations such as the Immunisation Advisory Centre, which then purports to be independent. And but if you read any of their information materials, they push a very pro-vaccine line, and particularly the information that they prepare for parents usually omits a substantial proportion, in fact, some cases even most, of the potential side effects of the vaccine. So, the vaccine companies don't tend to advertise directly to parents for those vaccines that are on the National Childhood Immunisation, quote-unquote, I just tend to call it the vaccination schedule. They have other agencies, sort of pushing their propaganda wagon for them, if you like. We also have a Ministry of Health, where I know from making requests under the information, the Official Information Act, that there are staff in the Ministry of Health who have a significantly pro-vaccine agenda, and in fact, that they are so pro-vaccine that they appear to be either incapable of reading the articles in the medical journals that they cite as references in drawing the appropriate conclusion, or they read them, ignore the conclusion of the article in the medical journal and write what they'd prefer people to think instead. A case in point is the Ministry of Health produces a useful book, actually, called the Immunisation Handbook, and it's designed as a handbook for doctors and practice nurses about vaccines and so-called vaccine-preventable diseases. It's got a lot of interesting information in it, and it discusses, each disease in turn, looks at sort of New Zealand epidemiology, looks at, complications of the disease, which, of course, is a useful thing to know if you're a parent, you're going to make a decision on behalf of your child and not to get them vaccinated. You should know.
But now they can't do that. Now they can't do that anyway, because the kids can just go ahead anyway.
Well, Yes, this is a new phenomenon in New Zealand. I mean, you know, up until last night, you know, at least as far as I was aware, parents' right to make decisions for their minor children were being respected. And obviously that is no longer the case. And that's, it's very distressing, actually. I mean, I've got to say that it's not unexpected because, as your American listeners will know, they've been eroding the parental rights regarding their children's health care in America for some time. You've got, for example, in 2011, the governor of California, Jerry Brown, mandating not only the HPV vaccine, but also pushing through a, I'm not sure if it's a law or, you know, what quite the appropriate legal term is for what he's done in the States, but essentially making it legal for children as young as 12 to be vaccinated against sexually transmitted conditions without their parents' consent. Of course, that includes HPV vaccines, you know, the human papilloma virus vaccines, such as Gardasil and Cervarix. And, of course, that also includes hepatitis B vaccine, because hepatitis B can, in some cases, be communicated through sexual activity. So we knew that was sort of an international trend that needed watching. What we didn't know in New Zealand was that there were people, you know, preparing to run roughshod over parents' rights and start instigating similar policies here. You know, essentially using social media like Facebook and Twitter to propagandize teenagers, including those who are underage, and in New Zealand.
I almost forgot that that was part of it, that government agents are going to use Facebook and Twitter to find children that haven't been vaccinated and try to convince them to and to go get vaccinated without telling their parents.
That's right. I mean, we've had a situation in New Zealand where parents' rights regarding their children's healthcare have been generally respected, as I've said. There's been an important exception to that, and that has been in the matters of contraception and abortion. It's been perfectly legal, which I disagree with very strongly, for doctors to prescribe contraceptives, including, you know, those like oral contraceptives and the contraceptive injection Depo-Provera, which can cause, you know, blood clots and result in sudden death. To girls who are under the age of 16, which, you know, when you're 16 in New Zealand, you're allowed to make decisions about your own medical care, and you're also legally allowed to have sex. That's the age of consent in New Zealand. So any policy that allows doctors to prescribe contraceptives for children under 16 essentially facilitates pedophilia. And, you know, further to that, you know, you have a situation in New Zealand where girls under 16 are able to have abortions without their parents being consulted or consenting to the operation, which, of course, is incredibly dangerous given the risks of the procedure. In fact, there have been some shocking cases here in New Zealand. I know we're getting a bit off topic here, where the first time that parents have actually realised that their daughter was pregnant is when she's practically bleeding to death from a botched abortion. Done in a proper clinic, by the way. I'm not talking about backstreet abortions here. We're talking about, you know, abortions that are carried out in illegally and in, you know, what is supposed to be safe conditions. And, you know, the poor girl has to be rushed to hospital before she dies. So, you know, we've had that as a sort of a bone of contention, and parents have not been happy about that for years and years. But there hasn't been the political will to do anything about it, unfortunately, because I know that in the States where there have been initiatives which have made pregnancy in a minor a notifiable condition if the girl seeks an abortion, that has had some very good effects. It has actually discouraged underage girls from having sex. It has meant that if an underage girl gets pregnant because she's being sexually abused, it's more likely to be found out and the offender identified and the girl protected from further abuse. And, of course, it also meant that if teenage girls do end up having abortions, they at least have their parents' support, and their parents are able to know that the operation has taken place and to get them urgent medical care if there are any complications. But that's gone off topic. So back to the vaccination situation. Yes, until very recently, parents' choices regarding their children's vaccinations have been respected. Yes, now there are people who are paid to sit on social media websites and essentially solicit children for vaccination. And if, you know, a child can be frightened into believing that they're going to get cervical cancer if they don't get an HPV vaccination, or that if they haven't been vaccinated against the measles, they could get brain damage or die, and decide to be vaccinated, then they are going ahead in New Zealand and they are vaccinating children, according to this report from TV3 News. And that's incredibly dangerous for a number of reasons. I mean, first of all, most teenagers don't have the cognitive maturity or the life experience to be able to make decisions about vaccination. They've got no idea, for example, if somebody's lying through their teeth, or through a social media website, you know, saying that there is, you know, no side effects from the vaccine, or that, for example, that their parents were misinformed when they told the teenager that the reason they weren't vaccinated with the MMR vaccine is because of the link between the MMR vaccine and autism. You know, teenagers don't usually have the skills to be able to work out, you know, where people are coming from with these agendas, or to find out the truth about claims that may be made by pro-vaccine advocates that may be completely untrue. That's sort of, you know, one of the risks, you know, in terms of, you know, the lack of maturity of the child. The second and very significant risk is that if somebody's just soliciting somebody to get vaccinated over a social media website, that person has no idea about the general state of health of the child. He has no idea, or she, about that child's personal medical history. For example, there is, you know, it's quite possible the reason that child wasn't vaccinated with MMR, for example, is because he or she had adverse reactions to previous vaccines in infancy or as a toddler, and the parents decided against further vaccines. They might not necessarily have shared that information with their child because they would not have seen the need to share information like that with a child who's too young to make their own medical decisions. And, of course, children may also be completely unaware of the fact that people with certain family histories may be more at risk of vaccine reactions than others. And they might not know their own family medical history, and if they do, they may not realize that it has relevance.
And that was something you mentioned, and I thought this was a very important part, because I was listening to you on Vapi Kupinga's show on Radio Wātea. Hi, Vapi. We love you. And you were talking about how when they do the tests and the trials for vaccines, they ensure that nobody who has family history of illnesses or whatever that might potentially have a vaccine reaction, nobody who's even slightly unhealthy or anything like that. Like, they almost get basically a superhuman group of freaks who are certainly not representative of the general population's health to come in and do the vaccine trials.
Yeah, I mean, they obviously they want in vaccine trials to have data that makes a vaccine look as safe as possible, and the way to do that is to exclude people with adverse family histories, or people who are already ill with certain conditions, or people who have had previous adverse reactions to other vaccines, and a whole host of other, you know, potential confounding factors, such as, you know, taking certain medications that might affect immune system response, et cetera, et cetera. So you're quite right. I mean, when you get, you know, information that comes out of a clinical trial of vaccine that says, you know, X percentage get this side effect and X percentage get that side effect, and there were no serious side effects, it may be that the data is completely true and representative of what happened to that in that clinical trial. But it doesn't necessarily mean that that's what's going to happen when you get out to the general population. And, in fact, I was reading recently that a large number of the people who've had adverse reactions to the HPV vaccine did have those family and personal history red flags that meant that they probably should never have been vaccinated in the first place because they, they're at significantly higher risk than the general population of having an adverse event. You know, unfortunately, because in, you know, the US as in New Zealand, there is such a strong push towards vaccination and, you know, there's a financial motive for, you know, medical practices to offer vaccination. But are you right? I hear music.
Yeah, well, we'll come back after the break, Cass. So if you just hold on the line there, we'll bring you back up right after the break. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Catherine Smith from the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine is my guest. If you're in Europe, you can actually now buy a copy of that fabulous magazine, and we'll give you the details of that after the break.
Alone against your mad, deadly, worldwide, conspiratorial, gangster, computer god communism with wall-to-wall, deadly gangster protection, lifelong sworn conspirators, murder, incorporated, organized crime, the police and judges, the deadly, parroting puppet gangsters using all the gangsters.
To the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show that's all about sleek, parroting puppet gangsters who try and push vaccines into your bloodstream. My very special guest is Catherine Smith from the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine. Kath, welcome back.
Oh, thank you, Benny.
Mm-hmm. Now, we had a question in the chat room, and I addressed this earlier, about cancer viruses and the vaccines. Do you know anything about this? Kathy, are you there? Hello? Okay, Kathy, we've just had some problems with the phones. This is the last segment, so we've only got about 12 minutes in it. So if you just quickly hang up and ring straight back, and we'll bring you right back up again instantaneously, because I really want to hear what you know about cancer viruses in the vaccines and what have you, because I'm not terribly well-informed about it, frankly, and I'd like to defer to your expertise. So if you just hang up and call back, that would be lovely. Oh, I hate technical difficulties. I really do. But anyway, we're talking about in the chat room about me coming to the States. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm a little bit anxious about the concept. You know, much like a holiday maker in 1939 might be a little bit concerned about their planned trip to Berlin, you know, for a beer festival or something amid the peppers, please. And if your nose happens to be a little bit big, you might find yourself in some real trouble. Some Nazi goose-stepping kind of scum going around there. TSA agents, oh my God, oh my God. See, if anything's bad for U.S. tourism, I'm pretty sure that it's child-thirsty pedophiles groping your junk when you enter. And if that's not bad enough, we'll irradiate you too. But anyway, Kath is back, and I wanted to talk about the cancer viruses and the vaccine. So if you know anything about them, go for your life.
Right. Well, I mean, it's interesting. I was going to say that, you know, the first instances of cancer viruses in the vaccines were the polio vaccines, which were cultured on monkey kidneys. And then I stopped myself and had a think while I was calling you back and said to myself, well, that might be the first well-documented instance, but certainly not the first instance, because there were massive problems with people getting tumours in the site of smallpox vaccines. Dating back to the late 19th and early 20th centuries. In some old books, you can see people with absolutely revolting tumours. They look like sort of massive, sort of fungiating sarcomas. You can only imagine how painful they were. And in fact, you know, I remember seeing a caption with one image which specifically said that the person consented to have their photograph taken as a warning to others about the dangers of vaccination and was basically hoping that they would die soon because they were in such agony from this enormous tumour on the growing out of their arm at the vaccine site. So, you know, that was a warning right back then that going and injecting sort of a nasty concoction of, you know, calf lymph and live viruses, just knows what else was in those early smallpox vaccines, well, could cause, you know, tumours, and, you know, not just benign ones, but cancerous ones with a fatal outcome. But it didn't actually stop vaccine manufacturers from deciding that it's a good idea to be using animal tissue as a culture medium for vaccines. When they started developing polio vaccines, they were using the kidneys from African green monkeys. And it wasn't exclusively African green monkeys. They used other monkeys' kidneys as well. And in fact, I can't remember which country it was, but there were so many monkeys that were captured and you know, rounded up into big holding cages and chucked on, would have been ships in those days and exported so that they you know, could be killed. And their, you know, their kidney tissue used in vaccine production, that a country stopped the export of monkeys because they were concerned about decimation of the monkey population. And a very astute scientist, whose name was Bernice Eddy, was in charge of vaccine safety. I can't remember the company that she was working for, and became concerned about the viruses in the monkeys' kidneys. And one of them was called SB40, which stands for simian virus 40, which in itself is sort of alarming because it means it's the 40th monkey virus that actually discovered. And they knew, I can't remember if it was the late 50s or the early 60s, that injecting SB40 into hamsters caused the hamsters to develop tumours. And in New Zealand, unfortunately, I think it was the early 60s, a large batch of polio vaccine that had been manufactured in Canada that was known to be contaminated with SB40 was bought by the then Department of Health for use in the New Zealand population in the mass vaccination campaign. And they actually did this even though the chief virologist for the Department of Health at the time said, don't do it, it's contaminated, it's not safe. You know, the bureaucrats, you know, knowing better than anybody else. Problem is they got a good deal, I suppose. It was probably cheap because the Canadians wouldn't use it themselves. It wasn't licensed in Canada. They probably got it sort of off the back of the truck, so to speak. It got used in the New Zealand population in a mass vaccination program, as I said before, and we now have a sort of a veritable cancer epidemic in New Zealand, unfortunately, and
yeah, it was 1 in 2 last time I checked.
The last figures I saw were 1 in 3, but then I haven't actually looked into incidence rates for several years. So, I mean, you could well be right. I mean, certainly 1 in 3 is too high anyway. I mean, it is horrendous.
I think it came up to
lifetime risk.
I think it raised up to 1 in 2 within the last 2 to 3 years. I think. And it seems very evident to me because I know so many people who are starting to get cancer, and they seem to be getting cancer at younger and younger and younger ages.
Well, that's true. I mean, our cancer rates in children have been gradually increasing for years. Children, I mean,
on that point, on that point, we have a question in from the chat room about some kind of retrovirus back in the 90s, which hurt a bunch of kids' intestines. I don't know if you know anything about that.
No, I don't.
All right.
There are some porcine viruses derived from pigs in the rotavirus vaccine, but I don't remember whether or not they are retroviruses. I definitely wouldn't.
Wait a second. He actually did say rotavirus. I read it wrong.
The rotavirus vaccine. That's been contaminated with porcine viruses. And it's an interesting story what actually happened with those vaccines. You know, first of all, I can't remember which manufacturer it was, but it was discovered that there was a porcine virus in their vaccine, and the vaccine got pulled from the market. And then they discovered a porcine virus and the competitor's rotavirus vaccine. We're talking about in the US here. And you'd think that if they pulled one virus, you know, one rotavirus vaccine from the market because it's contaminated with the porcine virus, when they found that the other virus, the rotavirus vaccine was contaminated, they'd pull that too. But they didn't. What they did was put them both back on the market and say, oh, there's no evidence that being injected with a vaccine that contains porcine viruses does any harm. Well, you know, I mean, that is the state of, you know, the non-science that informs, you know, sort of the vaccination policy. That's quite typical, really, you know. It's a bit like saying, you know, what the Department of Health did here, you know, probably what they said to the virologist, imagining here is, well, we know it causes tumours in hamsters, but there's no evidence it causes tumours in people, they probably said. And, of course, you know, it took, you know, a few decades to get the sort of the molecular biological evidence in terms of being able to isolate fragments of the SV40 genome, the viral genome, from people suffering from various sorts of tumours and cancers, and that includes some types of childhood leukemia, some of the brain tumours that, together with leukemia, are the most common forms of cancer in children. It includes mesothelioma, which, of course, is always put down to asbestos, but, you know, may not be 100% due to asbestos. You know, the virus may be an important cofactor. It's very difficult to know, you know, how much blame to assign to each factor. And also includes osteosarcoma, which is the very aggressive bone cancer. And in some cases, it can be treated successfully with a chemotherapy, but usually only after the affected limb has been amputated. So you're talking about, you know, not only having to go through very rigorous chemotherapy, which works, you know, if the disease is caught early in a majority of cases, but, you know, survival is by no means assured, and you can be significantly handicapped if you do survive.
Indeed. Kath, unfortunately, we've come to the end of the show, and this is very unfortunate because I think we could talk about this for hours, and in fact I'd like to have you on. And I would like to have you on again sometime, and I don't know, maybe we'll hook up soon enough and do something on video or something like that, because there's a lot of elements to vaccines and there's such little real information out there for people to sink their teeth into. And I just want to thank you very much for giving us an hour of your valuable magazine editing time to give us a little bit of info here.
Oh, you're very welcome, Vinny. And if people want, are you there? I'm still on. If people want,
we don't have any time, unfortunately. NoForcedVaccines.org, NoForcedVaccines.org, NoForcedVaccines.org for Catherine Smith's work. Thank you very much, Kath, and we'll see you again sometime, folks.